Welcome back to Radio AFS, all things football. I am your host, Steve Itzkowitz, RadioAFS.com, Facebook.com/RadioAFS, being brought to you by Gallagher's Pub and Grill, the ultimate hangout place for sports diehards. Don't believe me? Show up at 2751 East Broadway, Long Beach, California today, ask for Kieran, and find out that at Gallagher's Pub and Grill, I guarantee you that you will eat good food, make fast friends, and enjoy your favorite team on high-definition TV. Welcome, everybody, to the program for the next 60 minutes. We are going deep into the NFL. What quarterback controversy? Why it's dangerous to predict how a team is going to do based on reputation and schedule and so much more. And do the Niners have enough ammo at this point to know that Colin Kaepernick is not their quarterback of the future? We will explore that. And we also explore a team that I believe, even though a lot of people will say it's dumb, that has become a Super Bowl contender, a legitimate Super Bowl contender, after starting the season 0-2, like the Giants did 9 years ago, actually. So we're going to explore that on tonight's show. But first, what quarterback controversy? The Dallas Cowboys drafted a quarterback in the fourth round by the name of Dak Prescott, who for a minute at Mississippi State was a Heisman Trophy candidate, but then had a couple of bad games and then ended up fading down to the fourth round. Kind of one of those forgotten quarterbacks. Obviously, we were more focused on Jared Goff and Carson Wentz coming into the NFL draft, and certainly this NFL season. And so far, Carson Wentz has played pretty well. Jared Goff has not played whatsoever. But here comes Dak Prescott. And one of the biggest challenges that any team has, and ask the Green Bay Packers about this, is when you have a quarterback that has been effective and consistent for you for years and potentially are going to the Hall of Fame, like Brett Favre was before they decided to go with Aaron Rodgers and sent Brett Favre off to another green-clad team, the New York Jets. Well, now you have Tony Romo in the same situation, who for three straight years has sustained a serious back injury and has missed major time because of it. Here comes Dak Prescott, a fourth-round pick that no one thought anything of. And what does he do? He has answered the question of who is going to take over for Tony Romo when he finally retires, which may be sooner than you think, given that he's had not one, not two, but three back injuries that have forced him to miss games the last 3 years, including this year. And as you get older, your back is typically not going to get stronger. He'll probably always have a back problem on some level. It can be managed, but how much managing can you do of it when you're in a football game and running away from 300-pound guys that are trying to break your back over and over and over again? So Tony Romo is probably not going to be the same, which is why I asked the question. What quarterback controversy are we talking about here? There is no controversy. To me, controversy then was when there's no clear choice. Well, clearly, Dak Prescott came into the NFL much more ready to play than anyone gave him credit, a lot like Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers after he got the chance to start sitting behind Favre for 3 years. Dak Prescott is the key to the future of the Cowboys, and the future starts now. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say that Tony Romo is the key to the Cowboys winning the Super Bowl. Well, if that's the case, and you want him to have that chance because it's only fair, a guy should not lose his job because of injury. That's true. A guy shouldn't lose his job because he gets injured. But at the same time, do you want a guy to lose his job because he's playing well, as Dak Prescott is right now? Dak Prescott may be your best chance to win a Super Bowl this year. I don't think Tony Romo is, for two reasons. One, he's got a bad back. And even if he comes back healthy, healthy enough to play, being healthy enough to play does not mean you're completely healthy. I doubt Tony Romo will ever be fully healthy in his back ever again, being a football player and playing for the Cowboys, even with that great offensive line. Dak Prescott, on the other hand, is young and playing very effectively, and he's got a great running attack behind him in Zeke Elliott as well as Alfred Morris, who is a number two back as opposed to being the number one back before Zeke Elliott was drafted. So the future is now for the Cowboys, and to go back to Romo, who has never played in an NFC Championship game, who is 2-4 in the playoffs. If he is the key to you winning a Super Bowl, then that key is going to have a hard time turning that door that is going to allow you to play in the Super Bowl, much less win it. I would argue that the Cowboys have lucked themselves into a guy that could potentially help them win big this year. I would also argue that the Cowboys are not going to win big this year. Another reason why it doesn't make sense to have Romo come back if Dak Prescott continues to play very well. Because the Cowboys, at the end of the day, are still struggling defensively. They are 20th against the run, and they have 11 sacks so far this year, which means they're averaging 1.83 sacks per game. That translates to about 29 or 30 sacks at the end of the year. And believe me when I tell you, folks, if you are going to be a Super Bowl winning team, your sack total should be in the 40s, or in the case of the Denver Broncos, in the 50s. They have 56 sacks last year in 16 games. That is 3.5 sacks per game. That is dominance. The Cowboys are about half that right now. Therefore, the priority of the Cowboys, now I know the fans and the media are going to feel a certain way about this, and I understand that, but this is also why you're not in charge of the team. The people in charge of the team need to recognize that the Cowboys are not built to win a Super Bowl this year, because defensively, they're not good enough against the pass in a league that is oriented toward the pass. We are playing in a quarterback-driven league, despite the fact that there's a whole lot of mediocre quarterbacks out there, but I digress. The Cowboys are not built to play defense well enough in the playoffs. Tony Romo is not going to change that. But what Tony Romo can change is that if you start him because of who he is and what he's meant to your franchise, and you sit Dak Prescott because he's playing well, then you're doing two things wrong here, two very serious things wrong. One, you're messing with nature. Don't mess with nature, because when you mess with nature, bad things happen. Go with what's working. Our lives are a simple math equation. We do what works. We continue to do what works, but we also adjust when things are not working. That is the math of life. It's 2 + 2 = 4. It's basic stuff. But people get emotionally involved. They start politicking. They start making all these campaigns. There's no campaigning here. It is what it is. The Cowboys are 5-1 because their team is playing at a high level right now, except for the pass defense, perhaps. They are 10th against the rush, though. So they play very well against the rush, which is no surprise, because when you're going up against Zeke Elliott and Alfred Morris in practice every single day, you'll probably become a better rushing defense that way. But they're not good enough against the pass. So I would argue that the Cowboys are not a primetime favorite to win the Super Bowl this year. They'll get into the playoffs, but they're not going to win the Super Bowl, in my opinion, because they're not good enough defensively. Therefore, why are you going to put Tony Romo in there to make a Super Bowl run that you're not likely to make? And why are you going to mess with a team developing the chemistry and developing the plan necessary to move on from Tony Romo? Because Tony Romo is great as he's been, and I got nothing but respect for Tony Romo. When you consider where he started as an undrafted quarterback out of Northern Illinois, and what he's accomplished to forge more passing yards than Troy Aikman, who's in the Hall of Fame and who won 3 Super Bowls with the Cowboys, what he has accomplished is remarkable. And if Dak Prescott starts to falter, and that could happen, and Tony Romo is healthy enough to play, then you play him. That's why you play him. A guy shouldn't lose his job for getting injured, but a guy also shouldn't lose his job for playing well, because, again, that's messing with nature. And the other violation is that you're messing with the football gods. When you start messing with the football gods, you start doing things that don't make sense, the football gods are likely to punish you. And that's what will happen with the Cowboys. Therefore, don't take Dak Prescott out until he gets into a consistent routine of playing poorly. He might have a bad game every now and then, but then everyone does. But if it's 2 games, 3 games, where he's not getting 200 yards of offense or 200 yards of passing or a couple of picks or a pick six in consecutive games, stuff like that, when he starts having mental lapses, then you can sit him and put in Tony Romo, who would be a great, great – who would have an immediate impact on this team, but in the right way. So to me, the Cowboys should continue with Dak Prescott, and Tony Romo should accept that and understand that at the end of the day, their best shot to win is to go with what they have going right now, particularly offensively, and hope their passing defense can improve just enough to help the Cowboys potentially make a Super Bowl run for the first time in 20 years. Yeah, it's been 20 years since the Cowboys were last in the Super Bowl, let alone the last time they won one. But there's no football controversy. This is more of a media creation than it is a real reality for the Cowboys. For the Cowboys, it's simple. Go with what's working. Don't mess with nature. Don't mess with the NFL gods. And if it starts to not work consistently over a certain number of games, and you have a sample size, as we say, then you make the switch, and you do so with no regrets and no hesitation whatsoever. There's no quarterback controversy in Dallas, only one that the media creates because that fills their airwaves, such as mine. I thank you very much for the opportunity to do that. Speaking of filling airwaves, and actually, I'm going to take a brief break here because I am doing a back-to-back show right now. I haven't done another show on another network previously. And I'm going to take a bit of a break here because my voice is starting to crack a little bit. It's had its issues lately. So I'm going to take a brief break and play a little music track. Play a little music track here that will last for a few seconds. And when we come back on the other side, why guessing how a team is going to do by the schedule is dangerous because of all the things that you can account for. Which team am I talking about? I'm going to reveal that after this particular break. You are listening to Radio AFS, radioafs.com, facebook.com/radioafs. Enjoy Up All Night to Get Lucky because, well, I think we're all up all night to get lucky if we're living in that kind of lifestyle here. So enjoy Up All Night to Get Lucky by Daft Punk. And on the other side, I will give you the answer to that question as to which team I'm referring to that we assume was going to be the second best team in the NFL, but may not be given a recent incident that occurred on that particular team that is going to have an adverse effect on what they're trying to do. We'll be right back. You listen to Radio AFS and the All Things Football Show with your host, Steve Edsworth. Be right back.
Like the legend of the Phoenix, all ends with beginnings. What keeps the planet spinning? The force of the beginning. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Radio AFS with All Things Football. I am your host, Steve Itzkowitz. Thank you very much for listening. Is it time for the Rams to part with Jeff Fisher? I'll have that answer just a little bit later. In the meantime, why it's dangerous to assume how a team is going to do based on schedule and reputation. This is how the experts go about predicting how a team is going to do. Well, that's a game they should win. That's a game they should win. They have ultimately losing games that they should win. For instance, the Rams losing to the Detroit Lions this past week, even though their team that started 3-1. So that's one reason why it's dangerous, is because unless you really break down the matchups and know all the circumstances surrounding each team and each player, it's hard to make those kind of predictions. But so that's when people turn to reputation. Well, this team, based on who they are and who they have and how successful they've been, are going to be equally successful. That team I'm talking about is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Remember the Pittsburgh Steelers, much of the narrative, and there's always a narrative surrounding these seasons as if we're writing a story, and then the story keeps changing and changing, and we'd have to adapt and adjust. And, you know, we can't stick with something and have it be right, like a Hollywood movie, because ultimately sports is the most unscripted thing out there, yet we script things all the time. And one of the scripted things that has been said about the NFL season so far this year, particularly the AFC, is that the AFC is a two-team battle for the right to go to the Super Bowl. The New England Patriots, who are looking like a Super Bowl team, as they looked in the past, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were coming off a season last year in which defensively they weren't as good as they normally would be, but offensively they are loaded. Ben Roethlisberger, a quarterback that has been good in the NFL for a while now and a future Hall of Famer. Antonio Brown, the most productive wide receiver in the league. Le'Veon Bell, when he's not a knucklehead and getting suspended, he is a running back that can run in between the tackles with power but run to the outside with speed and can catch the ball and can block and do all those things. And I'm sorry I called him a knucklehead. I mean to say that so arbitrarily. But he has had his suspension issues, and that has kind of hurt their team a little bit. But when he's on the field, he's as good as they come. And then defensively, Ryan Shazier, the inside linebacker, along with the secondary that got rid of Troy Polamalu and Ike Williams and is being rebuilt and is slowly but surely coming back up to the level of defense that we are accustomed to seeing for the Pittsburgh Steelers, particularly when Dick LeBeau was calling the defensive signals as their defensive coordinator before he was shipped out. Well, now Ben Roethlisberger gets hurt. He tears his meniscus. Now, it's not a full tear, so apparently it's just a cleanup job for the surgery. He could be back in as little as 2 weeks and up to 6 weeks, so he will be back this season. But the NFL season is only 16 games, and you have a Baltimore team in the NFC, in the AFC North, that even though they lost to the Giants and the Raiders last couple of weeks, they are a team that, if you're not careful, they will sneak up and bite you. That Super Bowl they won over the Niners 3 years ago is prime example of that, that quietly they're always kind of lying in the weeds, and then before you know it, they jump up and they bite some teams in the butt. So you've got that team to contend with. You also have the Bengals to contend with, and even though they've struggled so far this year, they're still the gold standard team in the AFC North, or at least a team that contends for the AFC North every single year, along with the Steelers, and even the Cleveland Browns, even though they are the Cleveland crap, because that's how their franchise is, are a team that plays very, very hard and is showing some life under new head coach Hugh Jackson. So it's no cakewalk, but they can get outside of their schedule as well. Don't assume that the Steelers, just because of who they are and what they accomplished last year, are going to translate to get into the Super Bowl this year, even making a deep run in the playoffs. They got ousted in the second round last year by those same Patriots, but the Patriots were ousted by the Broncos before they won the Super Bowl over the Panthers. So the Pittsburgh Steelers, no matter what their reputation is, no matter how easy their schedule may be perceived by some people, you get hurt, particularly with your starting quarterback who misses any time whatsoever, and knowing that the backups for the Pittsburgh Steelers, like Charlie Batch or whoever is the soup du jour, was Michael Vick last year, whoever the soup du jour is this year, that's a team that when they get injured, it throws off their team because they don't have a lot of depth. That is what I've noticed about the Steelers, except the running back. You have D'Angelo Williams, the running back, who filled in nicely for Le'Veon Bell. For the most part, if they lose certain players to injury, especially the quarterback, they don't have a lot going behind that, or a lot going on behind that player. And that's something they're going to need to work on, is making this team deeper at the quarterback position, as well as in the secondary and the linebacker position. Prone himself, although it hasn't happened so far this year. So be careful when you start assuming a team is a lock to be the second best team or going to the Super Bowl, because if an injury happens and you don't have much depth, it's going to hurt you and you're going to have injuries. Show me an NFL team that doesn't have an injury during the season, and I'll show you an NFL team that is currently defunct, like the Cleveland Browns were, but they reemerged the second time. Or before they reemerged, I should say, or emerged for the second time as a franchise. The Pittsburgh Steelers, if they could somehow hold water while Roethlisberger's out, and then hope Roethlisberger comes back, and also hope that he doesn't get injured again, because he's getting kind of long in the tooth himself. He's still in his prime pretty much, but he's getting past his prime at this point. And when these injuries start cropping up, especially for guys big and strong as Ben Roethlisberger, you know that father's time is starting to catch up. And it could be starting to catch up. That's when Tom Brady's success over the years is that he has sacrificed his contracts to make sure that he can stay upright for a long time to come, figuring he'll make a lot of money anyways. Ben Roethlisberger is making more money than Tom Brady is at this time, meaning the Pittsburgh Steelers don't have as much flexibility getting players in there, especially offensive linemen, that can help protect him and help him extend his career. So if he continues to get hurt, then that is going to throw a ripple. That is going to be a fly in the ointment of the Steelers' plans to get back to the Super Bowl, and they have a shot to do that this year. So as a Pittsburgh Steelers, you've got to have depth, but also as a fan and as an observer, you've got to understand that the team that you think is going to be the second-best team behind the team that you think is the first-best team isn't always going to be that team. And the fact of the matter is that when you start getting into a comfort zone, that's when things are going to change on you. We get too comfortable with certain teams and their reputation and how they're going to be expected to perform, and then we end up being disappointed, which is a whole other issue altogether of having expectations and also having too much damn time to consider what may happen during the season, even though we have no idea that it may happen. So, but that's the world we live in when you have a 24/7 news cycle and you're trying to fill it. And a lot of people that follow and take the media's word as gospel, when really at the end of the day, there's no reason to judge anything or analyze anything until after the fact. So the Pittsburgh Steelers will probably be all right, but if they start to struggle, if Roethlisberger misses more than 2 weeks, Pittsburgh Steelers have after this particular week, then it could get problematic for them as the Patriots pull away and the Denver Broncos begin to figure things out. They've kind of struggled lately, but also other teams in the AFC that could prove to be a fly in the ointment, including the Bengals, where they could get it going again. Don't sleep on the Texans. Yes, they're struggling at quarterback themselves, but they have a great defense, and they have a great running game, so they get decent quarterback play like the Broncos got last year at times. And they're a team that you're going to watch out for as well. So Pittsburgh is not a guarantee to be the number two team behind the Patriots. That remains to be seen. And watch out for another team. I'm going to talk about them right now. The Buffalo Bills began the season 0-2. And everyone wrote them off. Rex Ryan's offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, was fired. And at that point, and it was done behind Rex Ryan's back. It wasn't his idea. The owners surveyed some of the players, and they decided to fire Greg Roman as a result of some of those conversations they had with some of the players or the other coaches outside of Rex Ryan. And since that time, the Bills have gone 4-0. Now, let me preface the following by saying a lot of people say, well, they've gone 4-0 against nobody. I reject that notion, and here's why. You don't get to schedule your games in the NFL. The games are scheduled for you. You can only play and beat the team that is put in front of you by a central office that has no vested interest in the schedule of these particular teams. Only that games are actually played so that the league can make. I reject that notion entirely. I also reject the notion that the worst way to judge how a team is going to do is by who they play. The best way to judge a team is what they do well, and is what they do well can translate to success in the postseason. And here's what the Bills do well. One, they don't beat themselves. Tyrod Taylor, even though he's probably getting overpaid as a quarterback, doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't force the ball. He also doesn't force running the football. He's smart as a quarterback. He knows when to throw, but knows when to throw it away, or knows how to throw it to keep it away from the defender, but he also knows when to run. That's working in their advantage, number one. And that they're going to do regardless of which team they play against. So that's number one. Number two, LeSean McCoy has reemerged. I had a fantasy team a couple years ago that I won a fantasy championship with, my first. And LeSean McCoy was my first pick. He didn't do anything that year. I had a running back by committee. It just so happens that I was fortunate that whoever I plugged in, whether it be Matt Asiata or Ronnie Hillman, they gave me 15 or 20 points that week at the running back position, which is great. Well, I got dominant performances from just about every other position that I had. But LeSean McCoy is the guy now that I expected to be on my fantasy team 2 years ago. He's running 140 yards a game over this four-game span since Greg Roman was fired. He has definitely rediscovered his groove in Buffalo, playing boring football, as Rex Ryan has put it. And he's playing behind a very good and very physical offensive line themselves. And then number three, the Buffalo Bills defensively have always had a knack for getting to the quarterback. 2 years ago, they led the league in sacks with 54 sacks. They're in the 40s last year. They're going to be at that level again this year. They don't make mistakes with their quarterback. They get solid running from LeSean McCoy. And Sammy Watkins is hurt right now. That's the scary part, is that Sammy Watkins not being in there is just another weapon for them that they can potentially take advantage of later on this season when he returns. But they get mistake-free play for the quarterback for the most part, who plays well. Not spectacularly, but you don't need him to. You got a solid rushing attack with LeSean McCoy, who has rediscovered his groove and figures to continue, although maybe not 140 yards a game, but if he's consistently getting 90, 100, 110, 4 to 5 yards a rush, then that is going to prevent Tyrod Taylor from having to throw the ball too much and keep their offense balanced and keep their defense fresh, but also their defense as well. They play really good defense. They're running the football very well, and they're getting solid, consistent play from the quarterback position. Ladies and gentlemen, who does that sound like to you? Last year's Denver Broncos. I know we want teams to play a certain way. I know that a lot of the analysis of experts is geared towards entertaining fans. Expect this team to pass, like the Atlanta Falcons and the New Orleans Saints. But they're not winning a Super Bowl this year either. Why? Because we hear too much about their past and not enough about anything else the team does well, because the teams don't do anything else well. Atlanta passes, they don't defend. New Orleans passes, they don't defend. The Bills' boring brand of football, like the Broncos' boring brand of football last year, is worthy of winning a Super Bowl this year. That is why I contend. I don't care who they play against. Who you play against is immaterial in the NFL. It matters in college, because colleges can schedule their own games. You don't get to do that in the NFL. But if Buffalo continues to run the football well, not make mistakes with their quarterback, and play good defense, give a damn who they play against. That's a Super Bowl contending team. They're even a threat to the New England Patriots in the AFC East. If the Patriots falter at any particular point, the Buffalo Bills are positioned to take over the AFC East. And if they're leading the AFC East at any time this year, you can assure that the shockwaves that will go through the NFL will be extremely palpable. Don't sleep on the Buffalo Bills just because of who they played against or who they haven't played. It doesn't matter. What matters is the way they play can get them into the playoffs. And then once they get into the playoffs, if they could get into the playoffs playing this way, they're not going to forget how to play that way or become completely ineffective playing the way they are now. They can run more than they pass. They can defend the run. And that is a formula to make a deep playoff run once they get there, which I fully expect them to do. They have come out of nowhere. And keep in mind that the 0-2 Giants back in 2007, before they beat the Patriots that year in the Super Bowl to start the Patriots from being undefeated all the way through like the 72 Dolphins, that was a team that began 0-2, but they had a really great offensive line like the Bills do now, and an offense that made plays when they needed to and generally avoided mistakes, and some had some lucky breaks as well, obviously, with the helmet catch with David Tyree and also Eli Manning avoiding what looked to be a certain sack. Don't sleep on the Buffalo Bills. They have the elements, regardless of who they play against, to contend, to make the playoffs this year and make a deep run, including returning to the Super Bowl for the first time in 3 years. And can you imagine them winning it? I don't know if that's going to happen, but don't sleep on the Buffalo Bills, because the more you sleep on a team that is doing things the right way, the less you understand how teams win football games and football championships these days. It's not a quarterback-driven league that you win with. It's being able to balance play balanced offense and having a defense that keeps teams off balance. And that's what the Bills are doing right now. And if they continue to do that, like I said, don't sleep on them. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back on the other side, is it time for the Rams to part with Jeff Fisher? I'll have the answer for you on the other side. You're listening to Radio AFS. Listen to All Things Football on Radio AFS. We'll be right back momentarily. In the meantime, enjoy Red Rider, Lunatic Fringe. This ought to be a pretty interesting track. I haven't heard it myself. It's going to be very interesting. So enjoy Lunatic Fringe. Don't go anywhere. You listen to Radio AFS at RadioAFS.com, Facebook.com/RadioAFS. Don't touch that dial. Welcome back to All Things Football here on Radio AFS. I am your host, Steve Etzkowitz. Is it time for the Rams to cut bait with Jeff Fisher? I ask this question because Jeff Fisher in the last couple of weeks has had some coaching decisions a little bit erratic. 2 weeks ago against Buffalo, not going for it on fourth down early in the game, went late when he had the fake punt that was stuffed by the Bills, but not going for it earlier than he did when he had an opportunity. And then 45 seconds ago at half, before halftime against Detroit, runs the clock down to 3 seconds. The Rams are in scoring position at the three. They get the ball to Todd Gurley, who doesn't score. And as long as they're under all sorts of heat right now, it begs the question, why would you run the clock down to 3 seconds? I'm going to answer that question, and I'm going to use that to transition to the point that I want to make about Fisher's status in St. Louis and what the Rams may want to consider doing as far as that status. The reason why he ran the clock down to 3 seconds is because his secondary, with Trumaine Johnson being out, was getting slashed, was getting operated on like a surgeon. Matthew Stafford and Golden Tate had a whale of a game. And Trumaine Johnson's absence was a big part of that. So Jeff Fisher, in Jeff Fisher's mind, he wants to run the clock. He figured he was going to score. He figured we're close enough. We're going to score. I'm going to run the down. We're going to score. We're going to have a lead at halftime. Well, he ran the clock down, didn't score, and didn't have enough time to run another play. And that's the guffaw I'm talking about. Why not give yourself enough time? You can believe you're going to score and be confident you're going to score, but you don't know for sure whether you're going to score, particularly when you get in the red zone and the defense is packed tightly like a can of sardines. So you don't know if you're going to score in that particular situation. You want to give yourself a chance to run one more play should you need one. Not to mention recognizing that Todd Gurley so far this year has not exactly been the picture of consistency running the football. He has been a little bit off, either because of a lack of carries or a lack of production when he's had the carries. So you were taking a big risk there, and it blew up in your face. Instead of going into halftime with the lead, you were tied, and you end up losing the game by three. That's not a coincidence. Which leads me to my point. Fisher, his big success in the NFL has not been winning. It's been relocating teams from one city to another. He did it with the Houston Oilers, moving them to Nashville to become the Tennessee Titans back in the 90s. And he's done it with this Rams team after last season. That seems to be his claim to fame in the NFL, not to mention a really nice guy and one of the most well-respected guys in the NFL. He's very well-liked. He's very well-respected. And Stan Kroenke, from what I could see, is a very loyal guy, and I applaud him for that. But at some point, Stan Kroenke, having a team here in L.A. and having the magnifying glass right over the Rams in a town in which that magnifying glass can be so daunting, it'll drive you crazy. And someone's going to have to recognize that Jeff Fisher, formula for winning football, his decision-making don't translate to a high-level success. Even when he had a chance to win the Super Bowl against that same Rams franchise, when they were in St. Louis back in 2000, when he lost to the Rams barely by 4 inches, when they were kept out of the end zone, when he had Stephen Nair as a quarterback, Jeff Fisher, for the most part, has had a decent but at times mediocre NFL career. Yet he still somehow managed to get opportunity after opportunity because it's always, well, the quarterback was hurt or the quarterback didn't play well enough. You trade away Sam Bradford. You trade for Nick Foles, who's not able to duplicate the 27-2 season he had a couple years earlier under Chip Kelly when Michael Vick got injured. Jeff Fisher has been the common denominator for how the Rams have come up short time and time and time again since Dick Vermeil and Mike Morris were leading this team to Super Bowls, or at least contending for Super Bowls year in and year out because they were getting the playoffs year in and year out. Then Jeff Fisher steps in after Steve Spagnuolo was an absolute disaster when he took over after being the defensive coordinator for the Giants, and he hasn't done much better, but he did successfully relocate the team to L.A. Apparently that's why he was kept. Well, my question to you is, why are you still keeping him, and why is it that I hear that Jeff Fisher is safe? If he's safe at this point, what you're basically saying is that he can continue to get average performances from his offense. He can continue to make decisions that don't make sense. He can continue to draft players at an offensive line in which Greg Robinson, your number two overall pick, has been an absolute bust. Defensively, they've been really, really good, but that's all you can say about the Rams is they've been good defensively. Todd Gurley is not a guy that's going to run in between the tackles. He runs outside. Therefore, you need an offensive line that's going to give them the opportunity to do that, and that hasn't happened. You've had Sam Bradford as your quarterback. You had Nick Foles as your quarterback. You draft Jared Goff. You haven't played him yet, and now you have Case Keenum who did play well, but you're still not getting anything gurgly, and your defense let you down because Jermaine Johnson was injured. If it's not always something lacking with these Rams teams. And Jeff Fisher has overseen those deficiencies or those inconsistencies for 4 years now, along with Les Snead. So if I'm Stan Kroenke, I stay loyal to Jeff Fisher, but not to the point where it blinds you to the truth about Jeff Fisher, that he is a decent NFL coach, not a good one, not a great one, decent, most of the time mediocre in terms of decision making, but how his teams perform offensively. And at the end of the day, if you are going to advance to the next level and take advantage of a good defense when healthy is as good as any, you have got to build an offensive line, but also understand how to build an offensive line, and then get a head coach in there that is going to maximize it. At least Jason Garrett, who might be seen as a lackey for Jerry Jones, is utilizing the strength of his team and in getting effective play out of Dak Prescott. He understands his team and knows that a run-first team sets up the pass, and that's why the Cowboys are in the position they are now, because Jason Garrett recognizes the best way for his team to play offensively. You can't say the same thing about Jeff Fisher, especially with how he's called some of these games and some of the decisions that he has made in these games, including the ones I just spoke about. So at this point, if the Rams don't make the playoffs this year, if you're getting 3-1, or if they get in and flame out in the first round and don't look good doing so, then I think Stan Kroenke needs to look into bringing in a coach that is established, has established success in the NFL, but that understands offensive line and can get the Rams to the next level. Because if they don't make the playoffs this year with Goff still being a project, they're going to be a couple years off anyway, so you might as well build an offensive line that is going to perform much better, get the most out of Gurley's ability to run to the outside, and let Goff in there to do what he needs to do to develop, even if it's being christened under fire, something that hasn't happened under Jeff Fisher. From one NFC West team to another NFC West team, Colin Kaepernick finally made his much-anticipated season debut against the Buffalo Bills yesterday, and the Niners got wiped out 45-16. A couple of things coming out of that game. One, the Niners' defense, especially without Navarro Bowman, is a sieve. They have completely regressed from the dominant defense they were 3 years ago under Harbaugh, and even after Harbaugh left and Jim Tomsula took over, they were still pretty good defensively. But now their defense is completely exposed, which is exposing our offense even more. A lot of people were impressed by how Colin Kaepernick plays, and I say under the circumstances, I understand where they're coming from. But I got two issues with Colin Kaepernick's game yesterday. One, he had 187 yards in a game where the Buffalo Bills scored 45 points. What that tells me is that the Niners probably weren't running the ball too much and had to pass. If that's the case, why is he only getting 187 yards of passing? Secondly, he had 187 yards on 29 pass attempts. You know how many of those pass attempts he actually completed? 45% passing completion. You may be impressed with what Colin Kaepernick did yesterday under circumstances, and I understand that if you're looking at this on the surface. But if you go below the surface, how much confidence can you have in a quarterback playing on a team whose defense is now one of the worst in the NFL? Because the Bills are not exactly what I would call an offensive juggernaut. Even though they have played well, especially LeSean McCoy, they are not a team I would consider to be an offensive juggernaut. They play fairly conservatively. But they scored like the old Houston Oilers team back in the day, running the run and shoots. You can't have that. And Colin Kaepernick has got to consistently be in the 200-yard range to get us 1 to 2 touchdowns a game at least with his arm, and then maybe one with his legs, because we know what we can do in the running game. He's obviously very, very good running the football, always has been, coming out of that pistol offense at the University of Nevada before Harbaugh tabbed him and showed us what he potentially could be in the NFL. But if Colin Kaepernick can be impressive passing or completing 45% of his passes and 187 yards, one touchdown on 29 pass attempts, You're not going to win that way for San Francisco. You got Torrey Smith involved, 26 yards per catch. Torrey Smith being our speed bunner, but only had three catches. You want to give him six, seven catches a game. You want to target him at least 10 times if you're Colin Kaepernick. And you want to get a good balanced running attack from Carlos Hyde, because Carlos Hyde has got to run the football to take the pressure off of Colin Kaepernick and open things up for Torrey Smith on the outside to go deep, as he is more than capable of doing. That's why the Niners brought him over here. But if the defense continues to play the way they're playing, and Colin Kaepernick continues to have to pass, 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 but can only pass for less than 200 yards on 30 pass attempts, that's not going to work. Not in the NFL, not in a pass-oriented league, and not if we can't get the balance attack that we need to win. That's just the way it's going to go. So I firmly believe that if things continue to go this way, you part ways with Colin Kaepernick, you draft a quarterback, you stick with Chip Kelly, who can build the offense the way it needs to be built, and you continue to develop the offensive line, particularly if Anthony Davis comes back. He retired, but said he'd probably come back maybe after next season. So if he comes back, that can help the offensive line. But they need to develop that. It's going to be a couple of years. But right now, the 49ers are at absolute rock bottom. It could get no worse than it is right now. Every player on the team is trying out for the team next year. And at this point, the Niners have to rebuild the offensive line, bring in a new quarterback over the next 2 or 3 years, and get the defense healthy again, get Navarro Bowman back, and, you know, rebuild the defense, particularly the secondary that's been the primary issue with the Niners. They need to take all those draft picks that they have year in and year out, and Trent Baalke has got to draft better than he has. The last couple of years, his drafts have been at best adequate to inadequate, and that's not going to work. So between the offensive line issues, Colin Kaepernick, and the issues that Trent Baalke has had as a general manager, Jaguars is going to have some tough decisions to make, and he better be willing to make them, because if not, then it'll confirm the thought that every Niner fan out there that he doesn't give a damn about the Niners, he doesn't give a damn about winning. The only thing he gives a damn about is being the owner of an NFL team and being the pretty boy that he is. That's all he cares about. But he's going to have to make some tough decisions, beginning with assessing what Baalke has done to build this team, which has been very, very little the last couple of years, and the Niners get worse with every passing year. That means the team is not getting better. That means the players aren't getting any better. That means we're not getting any talent in there to make the team better, and that's on Baalke. You can't put on Chip Kelly. This is not his team. So Trent Baalke better get it together, because if not, then Jed York needs to make that tough decision and give Chip Kelly a chance to coach his team up, not be the general manager of the team. We saw how that went in Philly. It didn't work. He needs to focus on coaching the team and let someone else take the groceries, as Bill Parcells would say, that he ultimately cooks. And that means Trent Baalke. So to me, he's a target right now that Jed York needs to take a serious look at and then go from there. But the Niners right now are rock bottom, and we're going to be here for a while until we get this thing figured out, and that begins with figuring out the best man to be the architect of rebuilding this football team that they became under Scott McLuhan and Jim Harbaugh before Trent Baalke took over, got rid of Harbaugh, and look where we are now. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/radioAFS, radioAFS.com. Don't forget to check out the Fallout Shelter, Tuesday nights with my man A-Bomb, 6:30 to 8:30, a show about talking trash on the sport diehards. And that's the name of the show, by the way. And I forgot to mention that earlier. But on the sports diehards, I just tell it to you how it is. I tell you the truth. I tell it to you how it is. I'm not here to talk trash. I'm here to tell you how it is while trying to entertain you at the same time. But if you really want to get engaged in a show that is all about trash talk, you've got to check out the Fallout Shelter with my man A-Bomb on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Him and his friends coming on there talking all sorts of trash to each other is a highly entertaining show. And I need to work on some entertaining stuff myself for the show. I'm just getting back in the groove here, so I'm going to add some more entertainment elements to the show. But mostly I just like to tell it like it is. That's my style. That's how I do it. And if you like it, great. If not, well, then you don't have to listen. But at the end of the day, this is how we do it on the Sports Diehards. We are going to add more entertaining elements to the show as we go along here. But if you want to get involved in pure trash talk and a little bit of staged hatred, then the Fallout Shelter with my man A-Bomb is for you. 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday on the same on Radio AFS through Blog Talk Radio, radioafs.com. Facebook.com/RazorAFS shows the whole schedule and the link by which that you can connect to the show page and call in and be on his glorious panel of trash talkers, in which I occasionally appear and will get in the trash talk live if someone's really pissing me off. But I digress. I'm going to take another short break here because, again, and I'm going to have a wrap-up here to look forward to coming up this week. Actually, I'll talk a little bit about the Dodgers on the other side here and what they're doing in the playoffs so far and why people need to either believe in Clayton Kershaw and shut up or not believe in Clayton Kershaw and just shut up. Because there's too much talk about Clayton Kershaw when the Dodgers are doing something here that, quite frankly, I think a lot of people are missing because we're too focused on one player. So I'm going to have that coming back here in a couple of minutes. We'll wrap up the show, and then we'll head into next week. You're listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS at RadioAFS.com. Don't go anywhere.
RadioAFS.com. Detroit Rock City Promotions presents Detroit Rock City Radio with your hosts Frankie the Wop and Derek Stone, also joined by Reverend Worm, bringing you the best in Michigan's underground music scene. Sponsored by DM3 Productions, Third World Graphics, and Big Worm Customs.
Detroit. Hey, man, wait a minute, man. You ain't got to come on like that with your cat. I'm folded, I'm forced, I was born, and I'm Jack of Orkin, Lizzie Borden, for successful abortion. Quick, you're right, even if I might be on my goddamn mind. Random Sam is a habit, an addict, passing the time. So when you see me in your town, just whoop whoop, baby. Cause you know this motherfucker, wicked, why they get crazy.
I'm so reckless, tragedy, and this welcome to the family. Never in question, lethal injection. Welcome to
welcome back to the Sport Diehards. I'm Radio AFS. I'm your host, Steve Itzkowitz. Can we finally put to rest all the chatter about Clayton Kershaw? Clayton Kershaw was 2-0. Basically, the Dodgers were 2-0 in starts that he had in the LDS. And then gets a dominant win against the best offense in baseball last night, shutting them out, along with Kenley Jansen. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to recognize two things. One, that Clayton Kershaw is one of the best pitchers in the game, arguably the best. Two, the Dodgers are a really good team. They're very well managed, and they've got a bright future ahead of them. I don't know if they're going to beat the Cubs. Everyone's just waiting for the collapse to happen, and that might happen. The curse might rear its ugly head yet again because it's the Cubs, and we're so established in that storyline that we can't seem to let it go. So if the Cubs win this series, obviously it will – That won't be the case anymore if they get to the World Series, because that's been the big bugaboo for them. And the Cubs may do that, actually, despite the fact that everyone right now assumes that their game two loss was a lot more catastrophic than I know it to be, because you need 4 wins to win a playoff series, not one. That's all the Dodgers have right now. So let's get things in perspective there, but let's also get things in perspective on Clayton Kershaw. You know, filling airtime is one thing, but if you're going to fill airtime, understand there's plenty of things to talk about in sports to fill airtime. Clayton Kershaw is a master pitcher. It's just that simple. But here's the difference. This is why I don't want to hear so much about Clayton Kershaw, because I understand when a team isn't as good as it could be, we tend to narrow it down to talking about one particular player, maybe two. For last year, all we heard about was Clayton Kershaw and Zach Greinke, right? Oh, and Yasiel Puig. Now we're hearing about Corey Seager, Yasmani Grandal, Rich Hill, Kenley Jansen, Pedro Baez, a middle relief. Remember the Dodgers were struggling with middle relief their relief pitching has gotten a lot better this year. Their bullpen's a lot better this year. It's a big reason why they're in the LCS. And Kenley Jansen for years has been one of the best closers, but now Pedro Baez seems to be a guy that can get the ball to him, along with Joe Blend, who's had some great moments in the playoffs himself, especially in the LDS. So not so much against game one against the Cubs when he gave up the grand slam, but other than that, he has been absolutely brilliant, as is Baez, as is Jansen. The Dodgers are actually a really good team. And if they're a really good team, then we should have a lot more to talk about than just one Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw has done everything he can to get the Dodgers into October baseball, and has now helped him win an October baseball. Some might say, well, he needs to win a World Series, to which I'd say the Dodgers need to win a World Series. He can't do it by himself. Starting pitchers do not play every day, and they don't bat in every position. He is pitching well on a team that is actually playing well. When your team is playing as well as the guy that you expect to play well time and time again, that's a really good team. And that's what's happening with the Dodgers. And how many people outside of LA actually recognize that? As I listen to sports talk radio, I don't think the point has gotten across quite yet. If they beat the Cubs, believe me, that point will start to resonate as loudly as a CenturyLink Field crowd during a Seahawks game. But the Dodgers are for real, as are the Cubs. And I wouldn't be so quick to bury the Cubs just yet, because they actually may win this series. This team is built a little bit differently than prior Cubs teams. And we all assume, you know, the narrative with the Cubs is, can they overcome the curse? I don't think they're thinking about that at all. I don't think Joe Maddon will let them. So don't sleep on the Cubs, but don't sleep on the fact, and that's the theme of the show, is people are sleeping because we're so focused on one part of a team. And we've been too focused on Clayton Kershaw. That doesn't have to be the case anymore, ladies and gentlemen. The Dodgers are a really good team now. At times a great team. The way they played in Game 5, from how Dave Roberts managed the game to how the players responded, that is a team that is loose, they're having fun, they have great chemistry, and Dave Roberts has pressed all the right buttons so far. On the Dodgers, and for heaven's sakes, stop acting like Clayton Kershaw is the only player to talk about out there anymore, because he's not. The Dodgers are worthy of getting some more pub than they get as a good, very good team, and even great team that they are, and the Cubs are not dead yet. So let's get some perspective and let's enjoy the rest of the series and look at the series for all the great players that we're seeing in this series and the great players that are being made from players that we might not talk about as much as Clayton Kershaw, like Osmani Grandal, for example. And let's really enjoy this series, and let's leave Clayton Kershaw to be the great pitcher that he is, that we now know he can be in the regular season and now the postseason. What more can you ask for? Well, I'll tell you what more you can ask for next week when we come back with some more topics on football and baseball, a little bit of basketball as well. In the meantime, thank you for listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. I am your host, Steve Vitzkowitz. We've been brought to you by Gallagher's. Until next week, reminding you that sports is not just an industry. It's a way of life, and we're out.